consumers are holding their money to a certain degree. And there is obviously a bit of uncertainty and lack of confidence going on. But I can tell you this, if the sun shines, everybody likes to spend.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Phil.
And this is The Underground, the podcast for garden sector professionals. Each week, we discover the trailblazers and innovators who are shaping the future of garden care in the UK. So, without further ado, let's get down and dirty.
So, Kate, I thought we could just take a couple of minutes just to reflect on where we've got to with the podcast so far.
Good idea.
And we're now on episode 11. We've done 10
goodness me
interviews so far, which is quite amazing. And just want to thank all those people who've taken part and given up their time to talk to us.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, yeah, I think that's been really enlightening. We've got some fantastic insights into various topics to do with garden care and the gardening sector.
Yep.
But one of the things which I thought would be good for us to have a little chat about is looking back over those 10 interviews, almost half of them have had yep. some sort of sustainability angle.
Yeah.
And yep. I thought it would be quite good for us to just chat and discuss why we as a podcast have given it such a prominent feature.
It's interesting, isn't it, Phil? Because when we first set up the podcast, we didn't set out to look at sustainability per se, but I just think where we are in the world, you know, where the world is going, the environment, the challenges that we all face, and being a garden industry, I think it's just so natural that sustainability has become such an important issue and a talk point with so many of our interviewees.
Exactly. And I don't think we've got an agenda as such, but I do think that what we want to do is highlight the importance that sustainability and environmental factors play within the industry itself.
Well, absolutely. I think, you know, you watch any gardening program on telly and it's all about gardening for wildlife, gardening for nature, don't use pesticides, don't use synthetic chemicals. But it's so much more than just that. It's not just about looking out at your window and seeing lovely flowers. It's about the compost you're buying, the plant food you're buying, the leaflet that you're getting that's talking about the garden centre. It's all so many more things than I think we ever imagined as well.
Exactly. It's
where the water's coming from to make these ingredients. You know, if you start to deep dive, there's so much there. It's not just about, do you put artificial lawn in your garden or not? You know, it's just such a wider topic, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, as you said there, Kate, you know, one of the key things there is the fact that we are facing this climate crisis.
Yeah.
And it's just the right thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. You know?
So from an industry point of view, I think anybody working within the industry and any industry really should have an eye on what are they doing? How are they contributing to the climate crisis? Are they having a positive impact yeah. or a negative impact?
So Phil, I'm going to put you on the spot a bit here because as a gardener, okay. I'm an organic gardener. I feel, you know, I plant trees where I can and I have a pond, I have a water butt, I have a compost bin, I have a wormery. So as a company, right. I mean, you're not just a podcast host, Phil, you are managing director of Rytobara. How has your company found, I mean, are you tackling these issues of sustainability and what you do as a business?
Yeah, well, that's a really interesting one. So, I mean, we're a marketing company. We yeah. don't manufacture anything.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are some things that we have done and are doing, you know, so we have chosen a green energy provider. So all right. the energy that we get, it comes from sustainable sources, which is yep. which is really good.
I want to know when you're having a wormery, Rytobara's wormery. Roll your tea bags.
Well, you know, maybe that should be something we should aspire to. But at the moment, we don't do that. We also yeah. Do offer sort of quite flexible working. So trying to reduce the amount of travel that we do.
Excellent.
So
yeah.
That
yeah,
so yeah. people who travel a long way to get to the office, they only come in once a week.
Right. Okay.
And that sort of thing. So, you know, we are on that journey. And yep. as a business, we are on the journey to becoming a B Corp. So we are Ooh. Going through that process at the moment.
Oh, brilliant. So, oh, that's good. Oh, you should chat about that.
Yeah. But I'm hopeful that we can definitely do that.
So. I mean, I think one of the things I will take away from the podcast is how heartening it is that so many companies are addressing sustainability, and it doesn't seem to come across as greenwashing. They really are focusing on it because, you know, it's the only way to go. We've got to, as a, you know, as a global population, you know, if we want to keep our planet, we have got to all start being sustainable. That's the bottom line, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think that actually ties into one of my other points that I was thinking about. And that is that young people who are coming into the workforce,
yeah,
potentially going to be coming into gardening, they have a different value set to yeah. older generations. And caring for the environment is intrinsically linked to their values.
Yeah.
And so I think if you want to attract those people, whether it's for them to come and work with you or for them to buy your products,
yeah.
I think you need to be aware of these environmental issues and actually be acting on them and prove that you are acting on them, not just, as you say, greenwashing or talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also young people can sniff out bullshit.
Oh, yes.
They're very good at that. They know when you're trying to pull the wool over their eyes.
So I think that's really good. I think we've touched a bit on what on why we've been doing sustainability, which yep. I think is really good. And I think that leads really well into our next interview, which is going to be with Kate Ebbins from Cappy Europe. So let's have a listen. I'm delighted to welcome on today's episode of The Underground, Kate Ebbins, the UK representative for Cappy Europe. She's been in the industry for over 25 years and is the vice president of GEMA and an ambassador for the Green Fingers charity. Kate, welcome to the podcast.
Good morning.
Thank you very much, Kate. Looking forward to the next half an hour.
So as I mentioned there, Kate, in the introduction, you're the UK representative for Cappy Europe. For those listeners who aren't familiar with the brand, can you just give me a bit of background to that?
Yes, of course. So Cappy Europe was started and is owned by Twan van der Ven, and I've known him for over 25 years, and we've worked with each other through those years. Twan originally started producing Italian white statues in Holland, and then we went over to Asia and produced a beautiful terrazzo planters and furniture.
Okay.
But Twan really takes the environment seriously. And in 2014, he made a huge decision and action, and that is wanting to bring the product back to Holland and make a sustainable planter made in Holland.
Right.
And the production takes place in his own factory in Tilburg, and his planters are beautiful, but they also have a great sustainable story behind them. They're all made from recycled materials, lightweight, and can insulate your plants from harsh weather conditions. Mm. The collection is ever developing with sustainable products, and now we have a collection of houseplant pots made from recycled textiles, sawdust, and artificial grass.
Right.
Ooh.
So the company can be transparent. They have all the certificates to show their authenticity. And the company's not just a CO2 neutral, but also awarded last year B Corp.
Oh.
And it takes a huge amount of commitment from the whole company.
Goodness. Wow. So let's just follow on from that a bit. So, I mean, sustainability is obviously important to Cappy. It would be an understatement to say that. Can you tell us a little bit more about the lengths the business goes to ensure the products you produce are as environmentally friendly as possible?
Yeah, in everything Cappy does, they try and give extra thought to whether it can be even more sustainable. in their approach. Their head office, where the factory and warehouse are all housed in the Netherlands, is equipped with nearly, I think, 7,850 solar panels on top of the. And if you Google Kappa Europe, you'll find them. And this enables large parts of the production to be run on the solar panels. They also put light sensors through the whole buildings. And no unnecessary light is left on. There's no gas in the buildings. The factory and buildings are heated by the heat released from the robots that produce the planters. So,
oh my goodness,
it's a whole process from start to finish.
It's like an ethos that they've got.
Very much so. Very much so.
We've had another B Corp business on the podcast before, which is just fascinating. So is there anything else you want to say about how it reflects the business as a whole, being a B Corp company?
I think the biggest thing is responsibility.
Right.
Taking responsibility for not just the important part of having sales for the business, but they go beyond on that, and they want to make a positive impact on society and the environment at large. And Twan's ethos is to do that and keep doing that. Being B Corp or CO2 neutral, and these certificates are very important to be able to produce fantastic planters with authenticity.
Yeah, brilliant. I just want to dig in for a moment here. You were saying about the recycled materials that get used in the pots, the different planters that are being produced. You mentioned sawdust, but you also mentioned artificial grass. So you're recycling artificial grass into a planter, is that right?
Yes, so I've got one here, as you can see.
Just for the benefit of people listening, the pot that Kate has just shown us is truly beautiful. It doesn't look like plastic grass. You would not know. It's not like a bench which is covered in plastic grass. That's not the type of planter it is. It's a kind of, looks from here a bit of an olive green, and it's got the striations, the kind of indented stripes, and it's very classy, not what you would expect.
So trying to make recycled products look good and also do the job is also a very difficult task to achieve. And Kappa have always wanted to have really beautiful planters. So whatever they do, whatever materials they're trying to, or recycled materials they're trying to work with, they also make the planters or bird houses or rain barrels stand out, I suppose.
Can I just quickly ask, when you say it's recycled artificial grass, is this grass that would otherwise just be rotting in a landfill when it's kind of been used?
Yes. So Kappa also source responsibly the recycled materials. Right. So they also do a planter or produce a planter that's made from fishing nets, corks, wine bottles, and then any extra excess from their Made in Holland planters. So they made what they call a waste planter. But the fishing nets are not just out of the sea. They are fishing nets that are already made from recycled materials in Denmark or Norway, and they're from fishing farms.
Right.
So they make sure that everything they use has also come from a responsible place or company. So yes,
that's an incredible story that you've got and you've been sharing with us already. For a sector, the garden sector, for a sector on the face of it, you'd think would be incredibly receptive to sustainable products. What are the obstacles that you've faced in bringing the Kappa Europe products to market?
I think greenwashing.
Right. Okay.
Many companies claim to be sustainable, but do not end up doing it correctly or at all. And this makes it difficult for Kappa to appear serious to consumers. That is the biggest obstacle.
Does B Corp help with that you actually got that certification?
I think so. I think if you look now on what you're buying, you see a lot, not a lot more, because B Corp is very difficult to attain. that you see now on some water bottles. And I think about it, I thought about it before Cappy became B Corp on some clothing brands. I do think it will make a difference, but it's going to, this is a process. And I think we have to be aware that sustainability is not a short term. This is a long term that will become part of our daily life.
So, I mean, within the industry, then there are two key decision makers that I can see in purchasing sustainable products, like the Cappy Europe planters, etc., that you've just been describing. Firstly, the garden centres have got to stock them, obviously, and then the consumers have got to want to buy them. How do you go about trying to influence those purchases and those purchases?
Well, you need to force a supply chain and then demand will come, but that's not a short-term answer. You know, the more long-term strategy would be with also like our GEMA members and associates, we try to encourage them to develop products, packaging and consumer advertising. But the biggest thing is educating at a young age from our nursery schools, universities and at work to upcycle, reuse, become aware of what we're buying, and then it will become second nature if it's all around us all the time. But these are baby steps that, you know, need to progress, but you need to get everybody on board in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what you were saying there about education, I think we see that a Generation Z coming through, and they are values driven, but they might not have deep enough pockets sometimes to be able to afford to carry through.
Definitely. And choices of what we're buying, what they're buying, what's affordable, and sustainable planters or whatever products do come at a cost because they take more to produce.
Yeah.
But I just think if education, at some point it will become all part of our lives.
Well, we're going the right way with peat-free compost. Obviously, one of the issues has been people are saying it costs a bit more, you know, it's too expensive. But I'm hoping that, you know, I think compost has always been undervalued anyway. So hopefully, you know, gradually that education is getting through. So if we can do it for compost, then hopefully we can do it for all other sectors of the garden industry. You know, education is key. Absolutely.
Education is key. And there's some great people out there pushing it. And it just has to be kept being talked about. And it has to be how you can also make it, put it in front of that consumer.
Definitely. So, you know, I think we all know that society in the UK, it's under a lot of pressure financially with the cost of living, and garden centres are also facing the double whammy of everything costing more and then the increase in the living wage. What are the knock-on effects that you can see happening?
I think the cost of running any business can be astronomical. The recent energy increases, the supply chain difficulties on the back of COVID, and now containers are being hit by the Houthis and being diverted.
Of course, yes.
From Asia, and then you have the living wage. But it's not just the living wage, is it? The companies have had to put up other wages as well within the business. Mm. This year is very, very challenging. I think the contribution firstly always goes on to margin, which puts a squeeze on suppliers before the recommended retail price can be increased.
Yeah.
But then there's a danger of overpricing a product, mm-hmm. And then consumers will not want to pay for it. Mm-hmm. But we have, I've been to a couple of industry conferences this year, and consumers are holding their money to a certain degree. And there is obviously a bit of uncertainty and lack of confidence going on.
Yeah.
But I can tell you this, if the sun shines, everybody wants to spend.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's hope that's going to happen soon, though.
Yes. We need it soon.
Yes. I think we've had the wettest February on record, haven't we? And
Absolutely. Absolutely. We just need spring to kick in. And yeah, and then people do spend. I think it's just confidence and knowing how much money they've got in their pocket at the end of the month.
Absolutely, absolutely.
We're going to take a short break, but in the meantime, it's time for Kate's Corner, where we discover the musings and sage advice from the Gardener Guru. So, Kate, what are we going to be discussing this week?
Well, Phil, I've got a very important question to ask you. Have you been chitting?
Well...
No, basically, chitting is something that we do with potatoes.
Okay.
And it's just, I must admit, I've got to research into where that word actually comes from. But what it is you are encouraging your potatoes to sprout before you plant them in the ground.
Ah, right.
You know, if you have a potato at the back of your kitchen cupboard in the dark and you bring it out and it's all got spidery, you know, spidery roots and shoots and just looks scary.
Yeah,
and it's a bit soft. That's not what you want to be doing. So with a potato, what you do, you want it to go somewhere cool, but frost-free, but light. So that's the key. It needs light, not full sunlight. And what this does, it encourages short, stubby, dark, often purple sprouts to form. And this will basically mean you will get an earlier harvest and often a little bit more of a harvest of your new potatoes.
I see. So you're not actually having to cut into the potato or do anything complicated. It does it all itself.
Absolutely. You just literally in an egg box, chuck them by a windowsill, not in direct sunlight, and then just leave them. And then they'll take a couple of months or a few weeks and they'll be ready to go outside into their planting positions. I like to plant them in containers, only three tubers to a big pot. And then I just chuck more compost on as they grow. At the moment, there is a bit of a price rise because of all the awful weather we had last year with potatoes. But not only that, not only that you are hopefully saving some money, you get a choice of varieties which you won't get in the supermarket. So if you're going to grow potatoes, my top tip would be to choose something different, something like a pink fir or a blue heritage potato or an Anya. These ones often cost a lot more in the shops, and sometimes you can only get them from kind of Waitrose or Marks and Spencers.
Mm.
So if you've been chitting your potatoes, now's the time to start planting them out. And main crop potatoes can go out into the ground fairly soon as well. Plus, if you're going to do some digging, it's good exercise to get rid of all that excess eating that you might have done over Easter.
Work off some of those Easter eggs.
Absolutely. I need to.
Excellent.
Excellent, was that?
Of course.
Thanks, Phil.
And back to the show.
So, Kate, let's just look at other things you do. So you've talked about Cafe Europe, but there's other quite important roles that you have. Would you like to tell us a bit more about your role within GEMA and also Green Fingers?
Yeah, both probably about the same amount of time. GEMA, first of all, I've probably been in 9 years, but I had a bit of a break when I had a change in the business. I've really enjoyed sitting on the council. Representing or being part of the representing our 170 members and in our industry, which is the major share of suppliers and manufacturing.
Yeah.
And now being vice president for 2 years and in April, hopefully becoming president. Which is a little bit daunting, but our team director, Vicky Nettle, and we have 12 great council members that we make sure that our members receive their membership benefits and the savings and connections and promoting and representing and support is what they need so that we can grow the industry and encourage newness and development and there's so much going on and there's so much that is affecting us. And I've seen this, obviously, in the last 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Green Fingers Charity, yes. If I could give up my job and work solely for Green Fingers, I'd love to.
Wonderful.
But so I met Linda and the charity, and for the last 9 years, I've tried to raise money. I have done some silly things, jumping out of a plane, half marathons, walks. But this year, it's Green Fingers 25th year. And there's lots of things that's happening, and it's important that the Green Fingers or charity name is being spread, not just in our industry, but outside our industry. I decided to take on a challenge, and that is every day this year to run. This isn't easy for me. Last year I tore my cruciate ligament, and but I really believe in spreading the charity's name, and I just thought, how can I do this? And I keep asking the same people for money. Mm-hmm. So every day, my 366 day challenge. So I run about 4K a day. And I do some other longer runs. My aim is to be at 1,000 miles by the end of the year, and to raise over £10,000.
That's astonishing.
I'm already at day 73, and I've got 8,600. But I am being really supported by garden centres and suppliers in the industry who can sponsor me once a month, and I am. Yeah, I am enjoying it. It's challenging, but enjoying it. And this coming Friday, I join the Garden Relief Day, and we do our annual 20 miles. So I'll do a quick run in the morning, and then I will walk the 20 miles.
Goodness. So have you always been a runner, or is it Green Fingers that made you take it up?
I like sport. But no, I enjoy running because I like to I love the fresh air. I do not like being on a treadmill. I've had a few injuries and my knees aren't the best. But I find if I run, it clears my head, and I love being outside. I come from a farming background, so I was very lucky to grow up in the countryside on a farm. But I love Green Fingers as a charity. It's really important to me.
It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah, yes. And they're so great, the guys that all work there.
Yeah, definitely.
Linda and Sue, and what they do is amazing. I remember visiting a hospice. We did a wildlife garden for a Love Your Garden episode with Alan Titchmarsh up at Keech.
Right.
And I just remember I was holding it all together. I was doing really well. And it's children's hospice. Yes. And I just remember being shown around, and we went into this beautifully decorated room, all Thomas the Tank Engine. And I kind of leaned on the bed, and it was hard metal. And it was where the children go when they've died, the parents can spend time with them in a lovely environment. Right. And that's the one that got me.
My love for this is that my son was in Addenbrooke's hospital, for, I don't know, 5 weeks.
Right.
And it was January. And I was trying to work. He was in isolation. Mm-hmm. I was trying to work there. And when he got better, the garden was, just a piece of concrete with a large chess game on it. And I said to Edwin, my husband at the time, I went, "We are donating money, and they can sort." Right. And we didn't have time because it was 2005, and we were flying at that point, business wise. But we just donated. Our profits basically and asked them to do it. And then when I met Green Fingers, I just because Alex could have, it could have gone well.
He came home yeah,
and there's so many that don't come home. So it is really, it does have a I'm not doing this for lots of different reasons, that it resembles something that I could have Alex could have ended up in a hospital.
Absolutely. You could have been there. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, goodness. Yeah.
No, I think that's lovely. So getting that personal view of how your involvement and why it means so much to you. I think that's really wonderful. Well, fingers crossed for you with that, Kate.
Yes. Yeah.
And
get that knee strap.
We'll make sure that we include a link to some sort of...
Yeah, I've got the Just Giving page. Brilliant. And you can see all my runs on there every day as well. So I am being very transparent on what I'm doing as well.
So we'll include a link with that in the show notes of the podcast. So if anybody wants to support you in that, that they can.
Thank you.
You mentioned there about Garden Relief Day.
Loads of garden centres will do something. They will have cake sales or quizzes. Yeah. It's not just about walking.
And not just garden centres as well. I know a lot of manufacturing companies, they get involved.
Yes, definitely. So, more and more, yes.
So I'll just point out that we're recording this before Garden Relief Day. However, it will be after Garden Relief Day when the episode actually airs. But if you haven't supported it this year, make sure you support it next year.
Absolutely.
So, Kate, you've been in the industry for over 25 years. Can you tell me some of the most significant changes that you've seen in that time?
Well, COVID.
Right. Okay.
And now obviously finding a balance as the economy starts to reset itself. Mm-hmm. There are more buying groups in the industry.
Right.
The demise of Wydevale Garden Centre and recently Wilko, even though it's a high street, has a huge knock-on effect in our industry. Yeah. But garden centres have developed an increased customer offering. Mm-hmm. Their stock levels are more of a drip feed, but that's because cash is key for businesses to survive.
Yeah.
Footfall in the garden centres is there, definitely there.
Yeah.
And it's just getting the customers to spend a little more. Mm-hmm. And our garden centres to continue developing and be world-leading retailers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because it's a brilliant place to shop.
It is, yeah. They're like destination centres and many of them aren't there, really are.
They are, and there's certain ones that are, you know, I know 25 years ago that started off as nurseries and now are destination garden centres. Yeah. And they're beautiful.
Absolutely. You mentioned there the increase in buying groups. How do you feel that has impacted the industry?
I think it works well for a majority of suppliers. Mm-hmm. It can be restrictive sometimes when new companies are trying to break through. Yeah. But I do think it helps suppliers to be able to get their product landed in multiple locations.
Mm-hmm. Right, okay. Are there any developments that you're excited about that you think we should be looking out for in the future?
I think the UK and Europe companies are really looking at responsible actions for developing sustainable products, for definite. I think to save our precious source of water as the world becomes more and more crowded and this demand for our natural element, which we need to live with every day. So I do think there are lots of watering systems that are coming available so that it can be reused in our daily life and business and production. So I would watch out. Yeah, I think there's some great developments going on.
I loved the dipping tank yes. that we saw at the Garden Press event. That I know it's only small scale, but just that the, you know, what that can lead to if bigger companies and bigger industries look at something like that. I just love that. And I really want one.
And water is something that we all need to survive. I really believe in sustainable products. So, and I know that there are, I think I had a huge conversation at the Garden Press event with the Minister of Water that HTA were walking around with.
Oh, right.
And I'm going to be in contact with her. But I think I really believe water, if we don't find solutions to reuse our water, you know, we just can't rely on it coming out of the sky all the time.
That's that.
Yeah. And out of our pipes.
Yeah.
I really do feel like our precious water really needs to be knocked on, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, listen, we interviewed Lee Connolly.
Yes.
The other week, and his favourite gadget?
His water butt.
Yes. So, I've got three of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think, you know, having a water butt should be in everybody's garden.
Yes, I know. Mine are certainly full at the moment, ready for the hose pipe ban in the summer.
Yes. Yeah.
So I'm going to just change subjects a bit, Kate. This is a garden industry podcast, but we do like to talk a little bit about what we're all about, which is the garden. So do you have a plant or a flower that will always put a smile on your face?
Yes. Sunflowers.
Okay.
So there's many different reasons why I love sunflowers. There are actually 150 species available. And, you know, obviously anybody can grow them. They're easy to grow yourself. My family farm grow sunflowers. I'm lucky enough that when I can go there and see them all in this amazing field, and as they turn their heads towards the sun, it just shines really brightly. And then also, like, my partner last year took all the dead flower heads, dried them, and then recently took the seeds out of them and gave them to the birds. So again, they are quite a recycled, sustainable, yes, you know, flower
yeah,
that always puts a smile, I think, on most people's faces.
They do. Brilliant. They absolutely do. Oh, that's lovely. And no one has said sunflower yet, so that's lovely. So, Kay, I want to say a big thank you for coming to talk to us today. It's been really interesting and eye-opening and just fun as well. And just loads of luck with your the rest of your challenge for this year. I won't say it's only March. That would be far too mean. But yeah, we will be watching your progress on, so we can follow you on Instagram, can we? And on Facebook.
Yes, that, yeah, Facebook, Instagram. And yeah, I've got my Just Giving page. If anybody is able to donate anything, Green Fingers Charity will be most grateful.
Wonderful. We'll make sure we put all that on the bottom. So thanks again, Kate. It's been lovely.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Lovely to have been on this podcast today.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, could I ask a small favour? Please take the time to review the show and share us with your colleagues. It really does make a difference and will help others to find us too. We really do appreciate you listening and want you to get involved. So if you have a topic you'd like us to cover, drop us a line. To keep up to date with the latest happening from the Underground, head over to Facebook and join the discussion in the Underground Podcast Group, or sign up to our email newsletter at theunderground.fm. I'm Kate Turner, the Gardener Guru. I'm a horticulturist, garden consultant, and presenter. To find out more, check out my website at gardenerguru.co.uk.
And I'm Phil Wright, the founding partner of Wright O'Burra, a creative marketing agency specializing in the home and garden sectors. And for anyone bringing a new product to market, we've created a handy 7-step guide to help take your product marketing from zero to hero. Find out more at writeobara.com. Thanks for listening.